Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. This is A.B. Dawji and this is the Big Picture broadcasting simultaneously on Radio Islam and Radio Al Ansar. Ahlan wa sahlan. And how's it, eh? How's it to all you wonderful people out there? Not very happy, are you? Well, I don't blame you considering the doom and gloom all around us. Yes, the doom, no doubt, is the frightening increasing rate of COVID cases. You know, we used to have numbers which were around 1,200 to 1,500 a day. Then suddenly it shot up. It went up to 4,000 and then jumped to 8,888. And last I heard, it shot up to over 9,000, which puts us into what's called the third wave. And WhatsApp is beeping like crazy with constant new janaza announcement. It's all so bizarre and crazy and scary. Yeah, I remember a long, long time ago in the, well, I would call it my pre-Hidayat days, I was a lighty then and we had a cinema next to us in a place called Ambango, just outside Port Shepstone. Yes, I grew up there in Ambango. Grandfather had a tea room, well, as they called it, a fruit shop. It was a nice, healthy life, climbing the mango and guava trees, fresh milk from the cows in the small farm at the back of the shop. Mealies roasted on the bawla, families from Durban and Stanger coming over, and of course mattresses all over the place, and playing carom board till late at night. The good old days, no TV, no cell phone, just good clean fun and extended families bonding. Yar, today you go to a wedding, a five-year-old twerp is walking past you and you say, "Hey, Baba, what's your name?" And he answers. Then you ask, "Who's your father?" And when he gives the answer, you are shocked, you get a shock pen. This is your cousin's grandson. Wow. Hey, and you didn't know that. Anyway, how did I come to the Ambango story? Eh? What was I discussing here? Let's see. Ish, I can't remember. Hey, why don't you stop me? You know how I can just ramble on and on. Let's see. Yes, the cinema next door to our tea room. Our house is also next door. So they used to sometimes show films that were very scary. Very scary and very crude horror movies like aliens landing on Earth and eating people or zombies coming out of graves and sucking out the blood from their victims. Eh? Terrible movies. Bad acting and the makeup was absolutely horrible. But we were terrified. Eh? And so these days it's almost surreal, totally unbelievable, the scale of the doom. Gauteng accounts for over 60% of new infections. More than 1,000 school children have been infected just in the past week. Hospitals are under immense pressure. And as I said, messages are coming in bumper to bumper about people that we know very well who have passed away. This is the doom. And at the same time, we're hit with the gloom. The gloom. Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Of course, that's load shedding, eh? Load shedding. Someone asked, what did South Africa use before candles? And the answer is electricity. someone else also said, maybe Eskom should actually tell us how many hours of electricity we will have in a week, not how many hours of load shedding we'll have. Doom and gloom, Habibi. Steadily destroying the economy, a double whammy as it's called. COVID and load shedding. Businesses are closing down, unemployment figures are going through the roof. People are trying all kinds of things to earn a living in these difficult times. Well, I read a very funny thing in the papers. Laurie Kaplan from Durban had a most impressive business card that gave him his academic or professional qualifications. You know, people write after their names, for example, Koos van der Merwe, MBCHB, FRCS, Ireland, in brackets, or something like that. Laurie Kaplan's business card had his name and the letters FDCCNSC. Wow. Hey, sounds impressive, eh? So what did they stand for? The letters FDCCNSC after his name. Well, the letters stood for Durban City Councillor now selling carpets. actually, that gave me a great idea for my new business card. I'll have this A.B. Tonle, T-O-N-L-E. Hey? Sounds good, right? T-O-N-L-E. And in brackets, just to make it look more impressive, I'll have the word honors written there. So what do the letters T-O-N-L-E stand for? A.B. Tonle, tour operator now laying eggs. That's right, Brazo, sitting in the posse doing nothing. Hey, if you are in the same situation, Mota, let me give you some advice, Habibi. Do you know what's the most dangerous thing you can say to your wife? Well, there you are parking on the sofa watching sports, eh? Hey? You shout out of the window to your fro, who is mowing the lawn, hey, how long are you going to take before you dish out lunch, eh? Hey, woo, suicide, Habibi, suicide. Speaking about lunch, my dear listeners, I can see that you are all feeling a bit down with this doom and gloom atmosphere. So I decided to cheer you all up. That's right. I decided to do something to raise your spirits. I decided to invite you all for lunch tomorrow. Yeah, how's that, eh? Invite you all for lunch tomorrow. Amazing, right? Are you impressed? That's right, dear Bayo, Beno, or Buzruko. This is an arm dawat. Arm dawat. Well, arms, legs, and the rest of you are also invited for lunch. There is just one small little detail that I need to add. This, my dear friends, is a virtual lunch. That's right, a virtual lunch. That means that you will cook your own lunch at your own place and then send photos and videos of the food as you are dishing out and eating and so on. And paste it on my Facebook page. Wonderful, isn't it? What a buffet we will be having. A methi bhaji in mince and lamb biryani and papri muthias and magni dar, steak casserole, fish curry and rice, karai ghost, aloo paratha, curry khichdi. Ish, I'm getting hungry now, right? Isn't that a great idea, Habibi? A virtual lunch. Well, I must confess, I stole the idea from another activity planned for next month. On the 11th of July, the annual Cape Peninsula Marathon will be taking place on over 42.2 kilometers, starting at 4 a.m. Here's an explanation. Virtual running events give you the opportunity to bask in the finish line without the stress of the start line because it's all on your own time and terms. Virtual runs put you in charge of how you experience the event and when and how you run or walk it. Runners who sign up for a virtual race register online and simply choose their own starting line, whether it's a treadmill or a neighborhood street. They run the race distance, upload their finishing time, and a few days later are emailed a medal. I was Googling this whole thing, and then suddenly I discovered that a virtual marathon will be taking place tomorrow, the 13th. In fact, 9,049 runners from 50 countries all over the world have registered for the Comrade Centenary Hope Channel Challenge, with 700 doing the full 92 kilometers and others doing 10 kilometers or 45 kilometers. So I decided to take part in this. Well, I've got a treadmill that's collecting dust. Or maybe on Sunday I'll go down to the beachfront and take some photos of me running. I'll try very hard not to cheat about the distance that I covered. So while I was on the internet a few minutes ago, I came across quite an amazing discovery. Quite startling, actually. Here's the story. A very tiny microscopic organism was frozen in the permafrost. Well, what is permafrost? It is when the ground is frozen every day, all year round, totally frozen. And this was found in northeastern Siberia. This happened, this animal, this microscopic organism was frozen 24,000 years ago. This extremely tiny organism is called Mbeloid rotifer. Yeah, Mbeloid rotifer. So someone drilled 3.5 scientists actually drilled 3.5 meters and took out material and found this tiny creature that was frozen to the point of being almost dead. Almost dead. The state known as cryptobiosis. Cryptobiosis. Remember that word. You can bamboozle the bully as he is having his mouth full of acne at lunchtime. Cryptobiosis. So this creature is very, very tiny, but is multicellular and has a gut and a brain. And guess what? Scientists brought the creature from 24,000 years ago back to life. Isn't that absolutely mind-blowing? Again, it reminds me of the cinema in Ubango where we saw science fiction movies of scientists finding remains in ice of ancient creatures frozen in snow like the dinosaur or pterodactyl and so on. And they took a few cells to the lab and developed the creature of 50 million years ago. And they came out of the, and these creatures came out of the cages and ran around chowing the people and so on. Well, looks like it won't be long before some mad scientist decides to make science fiction a reality. And a sudden thought occurred to me. I wonder if we can get the scientists from Russia to come to South Africa. We can take them to Parliament when it's in session and see whether they can bring the MPs back to life. Yesterday I was in a big supermarket in Overport. Suddenly the lights went off. Pitch black, pitch black. I was thinking how wonderful it would be for shoplifters, eh? One whole chicken up the raincoat or two blocks of butter into the handbag. No cameras, brazo. But load shedding is no laughing matter. In 2 weeks of load shedding, guess how much it costs South Africa's economy? And the answer is 25 billion rands. That's right, 25 billion rands. Right, that's a real killer. Okay, so you know who is, you know, of course, who is André De Ruyter? Yes, of course you do. We got all very knowledgeable people listening to this program. He is the CEO of Eskom. Let me say this. In the new South Africa, when people can't get their way or want to smear someone, then they resort to labeling a person as racist. This happened recently to De Ruyter. Listen to this. Earlier this year, former chief procurement officer at Eskom, Solly Nshitangano, accused CEO André Ruyter of racism. And Shitagano said the accusation were based on the way Eskom allegedly treated black suppliers. Mr. Shitagano sent copies of his allegation to the President of the Republic of South Africa, the Minister of Public Enterprises, the Director General of Department of Public Enterprises, the Auditor General, the Parliamentary Standing Committee on Public Accounts, the Zondo Commission and the National Treasury. Well, an inquiry led by advocate Ismail Semenya reported that he interviewed witnesses and considered 1,107 pages of documents. Advocate Semenya reported that these allegations of racism were wrong, egregious, false, baseless, and lacking any substantiation. And also found that this wild allegation was highly irresponsible, particularly because it lacks any substantiation. The Eskom board considered Advocate Semenya's report and had no hesitation in accepting it in its entirety. It also noted that in a separate disciplinary hearing concerning poor performance chaired by Advocate Kasim, Mr. Shitagano had been found guilty and dismissed. The board notes with serious concern the emerging pattern that when Eskom employees are charged with poor performance or ill discipline, there is a tendency for them to go public with wild and baseless claims that bring Eskom and its management into disrepute. The board will also like to take this opportunity to reiterate its support and confidence in the group's chief executive and his executive team. Hear, hear, I say. Hear, hear, I second the motion. So, put very simply, the inquiry determined that Shitagano was just speaking a whole lot of sheer nonsense. And so, why do I second the motion? Because De Ruyter is doing a great job. Get this. He came onto the job just 18 months ago. Eskom was at that time in a mess. It was broken. Maintenance was not done regularly. It's like a car. If you don't service it for years and years and years, it's bound to break down. Then you have to fix the brakes and fix the water leaks and fix the engine if you didn't change the oil for a long time, and so on. Here's what an editorial in our morning newspaper said. Years of mismanagement, inefficiency, and corruption have created a monster that impacts on growth, business development, and the ability to attract investment. So Reuters inherited a utility that was in ICU. Poor guy is trying to fix it. In fact, one-third of Eskom's units don't, one-third, they don't work. But let me give you some facts that will make you think. Well, the article says Andrei de Reuter has achieved something that no other Eskom CEO over the past 15 years could do. Reduce debt. Reduce money that it owes. Eskom's debt, securities and borrowing increase from 30 billion rands in 2005. Get that. 30 billion rands in 2005 to over 488 billion in March 2020. The rapid escalation of debt was a result of gross mismanagement, corruption and poor procurement process at the power utility. The Medupi and Kusil mega projects played a particularly big part. These two coal-fired power station plants were supposed to be completed by 2015 at a cost of 160 billion rands. Right, you got that? They're supposed to be these two coal-fired power plants were supposed to be completed by 2015 at a cost of 163 billion. 6 years later, they are still not finished, and the cost ballooned to 451 billion rands. From a cost of 163 to 451 billion rands. The overspending on Medupi and Kusile combined with load shedding because of delays have become such a problem that Goldman Sachs described Eskom as the biggest threat to the South African economy. They did not seem to be light at the end of the tunnel, but Reuters proved the skeptics wrong. Less than 18 months after he took the helm at Eskom, he reported that debt has been reduced by over 90 million rands, from 496 billion to 401 billion. The Reuters said that they have a multi-pronged approach to reduce Eskom's debt. Well, he wants to collect money that is due to Eskom by municipalities to the tune of 38 billion rands. And he is going to clamp down on illegal connections and non-paying customers. So there you see, he's a top businessman, came in and is trying to fix up things. So, to put it simply, let's see where I was now. Yeah. But of course, they're still gunning for him, accusing him of racism and all of that. I don't know. All he's doing is bringing in the best people, regardless of whether they are white or black. And so if there are more whites that he brings in, then they are better qualified and perhaps better suited for the job. Well, that's a good thing, isn't it? Everything must be on merit. That's right, on merit. Who can do the job the best? Not on race. But they don't leave him alone. Now the unions are after him because they want a pay rise. The National Union of Mine Workers and the National Union of Metal Workers want a pay rise of 15%. Eskom has offered 1.5%, which, considering that Eskom is now on a heavy overdraft to the tune of over 488 billion rands, as I told you, means that even any kind of offer should be accepted. It's a wonder that Reuters didn't resign a long time ago from all the silly stress, unnecessary stress. So next time the lights go off, think about how Andrei de Reuters is struggling hard to make sure that things don't get worse. So as I said at the beginning of this Eskom issue, the race card, accusing someone of being a racist, is a weapon that is often used for revenge or some opportunistic reason. And so I listened to a poisonous speech at a press conference this week. And you know what? It made my blood boil. Even after two glasses of ice-cold water, I was still fuming. Listen to this clip.
Cyril has resorted to using state power to purge those who don't agree with him in his party. And he's coming for those who don't agree with him outside his party. But he must come for us who are ready for him. There is an Indian cabal that is going on here. And it has co-opted some colors. They take all strategic positions. They did that in the financial sector. Go to every insurance company or any financial institution. It's headed by Indian. If it is a serious compromise, it's a colored. All Africans have been destroyed. Look at who's going to replace that African person who was removed from APSA. If you think I'm sick. Kanyago is not leading the Reserve Bank. It's led by Kuben. It's led by Kuben. We know who's leading SARS. They've taken all strategic institutions. Because white monopoly capital can't go directly. It works hand in hand like it did in the 80s. It works with an Indian cabal led by Pravin Gordhan to deploy Indians in strategic positions, including magistracy, when the case is of an EFF leader, because we can't deploy straight a white magistrate or something, they put a colored magistrate or an Indian magistrate. Go and check all of those cases. They put an Indian prosecutor or a colored prosecutor. Go and check all of those cases. There is an Indian agenda in this country that seeks to undermine Africans. And that agenda is led by Pravin, and it has been like that for years. O.R. Tambo commented about it even at some point. That's what these people are scared of, because that cabal, if you tamper with it, you'll become a hobo in this country. You tamper with Pravin, you'll become...
Did you hear that, dear listeners? He is speaking absolute nonsense. But you know what's worse? Is that this nonsense is dangerous. But there's not a single press conference where Julius Malema doesn't mention the name Pravin. He's obsessed with Pravin. He's fixated on Pravin, intoxicated with Pravin. He just can't get over that Pravin, who was SARS commissioner from 1999 to 2009, he presented Malema with a tax bill of 16 million rands. And so it's like a personal vendetta. Hey? Pravin this and Pravin that. I spilled coffee on my lap because of Pravin. It's cold and rainy today because of Pravin. My car had a puncture because of Pravin. The man is clearly losing it, descending into silliness, playing one old scratch record over and over again. Pathetic. So let's unpack what he said. Firstly, he pointed to the fact that there are Indians holding top positions in companies like the insurance business and so on. Well, here is the question. How many companies and institutions are there in South Africa? Hundreds of thousands, right? Correct. Add to that how many departments there are in government. Probably hundreds also. You get cabinet ministers, you get deputy cabinet ministers, advisors, heads of portfolio committees and so on. So my point is that there is a massive number of top positions in the country available. Just to say that there is an Indian here or there proves nothing. Yes, of course, if you say that more than 50% or more, more than 50% of all the positions, top positions are held by Indians, then there is some cause for raising an eyebrow, because we are small in numbers and it would be disproportionately high to have more than 50 or 60%. But if you examine the situation carefully, there is no doubt that black Africans are in top positions, especially with preference given to them to what is called the previously disadvantaged. And then we have BEE and all that. So there is this glass ceiling that Indians have to penetrate. Some people call it positive discrimination, where if there are two candidates for the job, one is Indian and one is a black African, and both are equally qualified, then the black person is given preference. And there are cases where even if the black person is less qualified, he or she still gets the job. That's the way it is, and I'm not going to be questioning that. So what's wrong if an Indian does get a top position? Are we to be excluded from holding a position because of our ethnic background? If that is what Malema is suggesting, then that's pure racism, nothing else. But wait, he is suggesting much more than that. He says there is a secret group, an Indian cabal that plots and plans about placing Indians in positions of power. They sit and decide, okay, let's put Mudli at the top of Discovery Insurance, or Sheikh must be CEO of the motor industry, or so on. Can you see how ridiculous this is? And Malema provides no proof at all that such a secret group exists, no proof at all about how it manages to put people up there in positions. It's such a load of bull. He calls it strategic placement, that these people who are put there have a certain agenda. He also said that they are deployed as magistrates and other court officials to try cases of corruption, especially against the EFF and all the enemies of Cyril, right? Are dealt by this these Indian or coloured magistrates and so on. I mean, really, really. Guess who is the head of this sinister, satanic, secret Indian group that controls everything? Yes, you guessed it right. It's the arch devil Praveen. So, as I said, this is a load of nonsense. But as I said, this is dangerous nonsense. Dangerous nonsense. Why? Because I see it as a as having elements of hate speech. That's right, hate speech. He weaves a ridiculous conspiracy theory about the Indian cabal, but many people will believe it. I may laugh and you may laugh, but many people may believe it. And his words, all Africans have been destroyed. By whom? And the answer is by Indians. Well, this is my this, in my view, is quite clearly hate speech. Therefore, it's extremely dangerous. We know throughout history that when a group is demonized, then action follows. The big one is in Germany in 1930s when Jews were demonized, and you know how that ended. And of course, we know of what happened in Serbia. The president of Serbia, Slobodan Milosevic, used the media to demonize the Muslims of Bosnia-Herzegovina, accusing them of all kinds of terrible deeds, that they were murdering Serbian babies whose bodies were shown to be on TV to be floating down the Drina River, and so on and so on. The Serbian public was highly upset and very angry, and they wanted action against Muslims, and so you had the massacres that followed. Demonization of one group by another is a slow and dangerous process. To say that Indians have destroyed the Africans is to plant a very serious suggestion into the minds of people, very, very serious indeed, that could have very serious consequences, especially in these terrible economic times we are living in. The idea is that the black man is suffering because the Indian has destroyed you. You see, you are suffering because the Indian has destroyed you. He actually used those words. So Malema hatched this ridiculous conspiracy theory for his own benefit, maybe to get at Praveen once again, or to show that our judicial system is controlled by Cyril and the Indians and the coloureds, and of course at the back of it all is the white monopoly capital. So in the future, if the EFF and its leaders are charged with crimes, especially corruption, the whole process is unfair and unjust. He could be setting the stage now for some future outcome. But let me ask you this. What if it emerged that Praveen Gordon received 4.55 million rands from the VBS bank that went bankrupt? What if he received it for doing absolutely nothing? How would Malema have responded at this news? Praveen Bhai would have had to make a raft very quickly and row back to India. Can you just imagine how Malema and the EFF would bay for Praveen's blood? Not only would they shout loudly all over South Africa, pay back the, have demonstrations saying, pay back the money, pay back the money, pay back the money, but make sure that all his assets were taken and he gets a long jail term. But hang on, wait. Someone did agree to pay back the money. And who was that? Ah, yes, it was Brian Chibambu, the brother of Deputy President of the EFF, Floyd Chibambu. He took 4.55 million rands from VBF, from the VBS bank. And let me remind you people that many poor people, pensioners and so on, put their life savings into the VBS bank that went bankrupt. And many municipalities were told to put all their money into VBS. And now they are struggling because the bank was looted. A very brave lady, Polly van Wyk, an investigative reporter for the Daily Maverick, closely examined the looting and the money that Brian Chibambu took. Listen to this. The Daily Maverick has, over the past few years, reported extensively on the VBS heist, right, the robbery, which allegedly linked numerous municipalities, business people and politicians, including EFF members, amongst others, to the wide-scale looting. Speaking on 702's, Polly van Wyk, investigative journalist on the Daily Maverick, explained why Brian Chibambu signed the acknowledgement. She says, "We know from my investigation that money was sent to the EFF, the party itself, to fund its fourth birthday bash in Amlazi. It was sent to Floyd Chibambu to fund all sorts of luxury clothing and parties. The same with Julius Malema. It was stolen money," said van Wyk. She says, "He lied to all of us," that is Brian. "He lied to all of us. When I questioned him about how he received the money, we spoke about 16 million rands in cash and around 4 million in loans. He lied about it and said he had a business relationship." So there you are. There you are. But Chibambu lied. And did Malema get angry about this kind of dirty dealings? Of course not. Of course not. Everything is about Praveen, Praveen. Let me end this topic by saying that Malema tried this before about Praveen having a secret group doing bad things at SARS, right? Now he's speaking about Indian cabal. Not long ago, he said that Praveen had what he called a rogue unit at SARS, implying that this was an illegal operation. He again played this broken record over and over again, right, about the rogue unit. And the matter was taken to the public protector and eventually ended up in court. Incidentally, it looks like Malema and the public protector, Busisiwe Mkobane, became chummies at that time. And that's probably why Julius said that he will oppose any move to remove her from office when the matter comes up very soon in Parliament. Anyway, the so-called rogue unit issue went to the High Court. On the 7th of December 2020, the High Court basically told Busisiwe Mkobane to futsack with her nonsense. Well, those were not the exact words. Listen to this. The High Court set aside Public Protector Busisiwe Mkobane's findings on the so-called rogue unit, concluding that her report is the product of a wholly irrational process bereft of any sound legal or factual basis. In a blistering judgment delivered on Monday in Pretoria, the court found that Mkobane allowed her important office to be used to try and resuscitate a long-dead fake news propaganda fiction. Woo! In a report, Mkobane accused now Praveen Gordhan of establishing an unlawful intelligence unit at the South African Reserve Services, at SARS, in 2007 when he was the tax agency's commissioner. In 2018, Mkobane received a complaint from Floyd Chibambu, the deputy president of the Economic Freedom Fighters, who claimed Gordhan's, in his words, willingly established an intelligence unit against the intelligence laws of South Africa. Chibambu based his claim on a 2014 investigative report compiled by a panel chaired by advocate Muzi Sekakane. But in 2018, retired judge Robert Nugent, who headed up the SARS Commission of Inquiry, could not find evidence of the unlawfulness of the unit. The High Court found that Mkobane's inexplicably ignored the Nugent report in reaching her conclusion. The court also found no factual or legal basis upon which it can be concluded that the establishment of the unit was unlawful. So there you have it, folks. First the rogue unit nonsense, and now the bull about the Indian cabal headed by Praveen. Malema needs a heavy dose of castor oil and Brooklex to empty his head of whatever is clogging it. Right, let me see how much of time I have left. Right, let's see what we can cover. Anyway, let me see. I heard a chap on radio yesterday. This is what he said. Hey, 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 hey. The new South Africa. Ay, ay, ay. Hi, Bo. Hey, hey, Icona. Hey, this new South Africa. Ay, 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 ay. No, 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 no. The corruption. Yo, 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 yo. Hey, hey, hey. New South Africa. Me. I'm moving to Zimbabwe. that's what he said on radio. That's all he said, eh? Well, here's a quick one about strange dealings. You know who is the person that's going to take over from Zweli Mkhize? Do you know who's the new person? Well, Ramaphosa this week appointed tourism minister Mama Boloko Kubayi Nkubane as acting health minister. Here's the juicy part. Mama Loko paid 150,000 rands for something called a two-hour cook-off with the media personality Somzi Mplongo Matong a few weeks ago. The event, which was built as a showcase of the skills and innovative ventures critical in growing and sustaining the hospitality industry, was held at the Hangout 1632 restaurant in Tembisa. Yes, sir. 150,000 rands for a two-hour cook-off. As she explained, a showcase of the skills and innovative ventures critical in growing and sustaining the hospitality industry. Sure. Hey? And now she is going to be our acting minister of health. Aibo. Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, let's park that subject. And now to another charge against a top man, our very respectable Judge Siraj Desai. The short story is that the South African Zionist Federation lodged a complaint with the Judicial Conduct Committee saying that Desai is biased and therefore implying that he should be called up for misconduct. At the core of the charge is the fact that Judge Desai has strong views against Israel's treatment of the Palestinians. And so, because he is pro-Palestinians, he is biased, so they claim. And that's wrong, because a judge must not be biased. Did you get that? Well, Judge Desai responded very strongly to this accusation, which I won't discuss now, what he said. Let me give you my views about this. Can a judge hold strong views about any matter? That's the question. Of course he can. A judge can say that he is strongly opposed to gender-based violence, for example. Obviously, nothing wrong with holding strong views against that. He can say that he is strongly opposed to the wanton deforestation in the world, which is leading dramatically to global warming or fossil fuel pollution. He can have strong views on child labor and so on. You get the point, right? Nothing wrong in having strong views about such issues. What it boils down to is that if a matter is seen very clearly, identified very clearly as being bad or evil, such as child labor, then a person of good sense will certainly hold a strong negative view about that issue. That's perfectly reasonable. And therefore, it's perfectly reasonable for a judge to hold such a view. You got that? So the whole world, including judges, were absolutely correct in having strong views against apartheid South Africa. Judges were not told that they should be unbiased about apartheid South Africa, which reminds me of an expression. There's a special place in hell for those who remain neutral on a moral issue. There's a special place in hell for those who remain neutral on a moral issue. So let's look at Israel. B'Tselem, a human rights organization of long-standing and well-respected, declared recently that what Israel is doing to the Palestinians can be labeled as apartheid. Human Rights Watch said the same thing. And here's the big one. Here's the big one. Two former Israeli ambassadors to South Africa, Ilan Baruch and Alon Lail, have called the Israeli occupation of the West Bank apartheid, drawing parallels with South Africa's system of institutionalized racial segregation that ended in 1994. And this is what they said. It is time for the world to recognize that what we saw in South Africa decades ago is happening in the occupied Palestinian territories also. The big one. So, dear listeners, given what you've just heard and the testimony of hundreds of very reputable people, including Desmond Tutu, who said that what's happening in Israel is worse than apartheid. Is it therefore correct to say that Israel is immoral and wrong in its evil policies of discrimination? And the answer is an absolute and very loud yes. Anyway, our own eyes see the brutality that Palestinians are subjected to. So a judge feeling and acting strongly against such injustice and gross human rights violations is perfectly in order to hold such views. But the South African Zionist Federation says it's out of order, that he is out of order. Let me add this. The South African government, together with civil society, must make a very clear and firm declaration that it is perfectly right to say that Israel is wrong. Such a clear resolution would put an end to any charge or accusation of unfairness or bias or unfounded criticism of Israel. Israel is an apartheid state, and therefore it is expected that right-thinking people, freedom-loving people should oppose it. Khalas. Finish and klar. No debate. Subject closed. End of story of this biased story nonsense. Well, still on the subject of Israel, tensions are running high on... looking at the time also. Tensions are running high. On Tuesday, right-wing Israelis will be marching up to the Damascus gate of the old city of Jerusalem, where they will be dancing and holding Israeli flags. This is to commemorate Jerusalem Day, as they call it, and that is the capture of East Jerusalem, where Al-Aqsa is located, in the so-called Six-Day War of 1967. The so-called flag march is due to take place on the 10th of May, was due to take place on the 10th of May, but the rocket fire from Gaza stopped it. Then it was proposed that the march would take place through the Muslim quarter of the old city where Al-Aqsa is located. That would be, of course, very provocative. So that's been changed also. The march will pass the Damascus gate, where they will be dancing with the flags and so on, and then it will head off to the Jaffa gate and the Wailing Wall. The police will be out in force. Hamas said it will be watching closely and will act if anything serious happens. So the situation is very tense. That's, of course, going to be taking place on Tuesday. But tomorrow, Sunday, the Israeli parliament will vote on deciding whether the 8 small parties that come together will form the new government. They will be voting on that, therefore, thereby boot Netanyahu out as prime minister. But Netanyahu has been working very hard to attract some members of the 8 parties that came together. And so thereby reduce their numbers below 61 so that they can't form the new government. So watch these developments closely Sunday, tomorrow, and also on Tuesday. Right. I'm going to finish off now. And let's see what I got for you. Right. A doctor was addressing a large audience in Oxford in the UK, and he said, "The material we put into our stomachs should have killed most of us sitting here years ago. Red meat is full of steroids and dye. Soft drinks corrode your stomach lining. Chinese food is loaded with MSG. High trans fat diets can be disastrous, and none of us realizes the long-term effects caused by germs in our drinking water. But there is one thing that is the most dangerous of all, and most of us have or will eat it. Can anyone here tell me what food it is that causes the most grief and suffering for years after eating it?" Well, after several seconds of quiet, a 70-year-old man in the front row raised his hand and softly said, "Wedding cake!" The laughter was uncontrollable. Right. Late one night, a burglar broke into a house, and while he was sneaking around, he heard a voice say, "Jesus is watching you! Jesus is watching you!" He looked around and saw nothing. He kept on creeping and again heard, "Jesus is watching you! Jesus is watching you!" In a dark corner, he saw a cage with a parrot inside. The burglar asked the parrot, "Hey, was it you who said Jesus is watching me?" The parrot replied, "Yes!" Well, very relieved, the burglar asked, "What is your name?" And the parrot said, "Clarence! Clarence!" And the burglar said, "That's a stupid name for a parrot. What idiot named you Clarence?" And the parrot answered, "The same idiot that named the Rottweiler Jesus." Right, last one. Okay. I think we've got a minute left. The Home Affairs asked Muthu, where were you born? And Muthu said, South Africa, say. And the clerk said, which part? And Muthu replied, my whole body, sir. Right. Last 30 seconds left. Let's see what I got. Well, Ronnie was in ICU again, and his friend Gulambai went to visit him. And Gulam said, hey, Ron, what happened? And Ronnie replied, hey, Gulu, what I must tell you? What I must tell you and all, man? My fro Pushpa was taking afternoon dose. When she woke up from the sofa, she said, hey, darling, guess what? I just dreamed that you gave me a pearl necklace. What do you think it means? So I told her, sweetie, don't worry. You'll know tonight. And in the evening, I came home with a small package and gave it to her while she was cooking in the kitchen. Hey, Gulu, she was so excited, man. She opened it to find a book entitled The Meaning of Dreams. The frying pan with the hot oil came flying, Gulu. All right, this is Abhi Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.